Good evening. Shall we begin in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit? God of the universe, you are the Father of all of us. You have sent your creation made out of love. You sent your Son, who is love, to be with us and to tell us that we are important, that we are your gifts, that we are your children. Help us always to remember that, even as we go out into the world and share that with one another. And we ask all this through Christ our Lord. Amen. Okay? Can you hear me okay? If you can't, just let me know. Okay? Okay? Good enough. Okay. First thing, I gave you homework yesterday, right? Three things. How many of you went into the bathroom, took off all your clothes, and said, wow, you are handsome or you were pretty? All those who did that, raise your hands.
I didn't say I was pretty, but I did it.
Honest to God, you did it?
I did it.
Okay. And was it scary or was it good?
It was kind of scary, but it's me.
Okay. Good enough. And the second thing was, I had mentioned to you, like we mentioned the Beatitudes, seeing good in other people, and I asked you to say something good to someone to bring out the goodness in them. Did you do that?
Yes.
Boy, you're pretty good. Well, and the third thing was what? Okay. That's right, to do something for creation. Okay, just something, even if it's just watering a plant or pruning something or just something just to show your participation, being a co-creator with our God. As I mentioned to you last night, creation is still happening. Stars are being formed, black holes are being formed, babies are being born. Creation continues, and we are co-creators in that. Okay? So that's the homework. I'll give you more homework later on. Tonight's going to be just a little bit different. I'll talk a little while, and then afterwards, I'm going to have the Blessed Sacrament here and for each of us to go and reverence and actually be able to touch the monstrance. Okay, something, and I'll explain to you why I want to do that. Okay? Good enough? Okay. Actually, we're going to have the same slides we had last night, but just something in the background. So if you get tired of me, fall asleep watching that. Last night, there was this young guy that came. I don't think he's part of your parish, but I asked Father John, and he said he didn't know him. But after the hour, he came up to me, and he was with his mother, but he came up and said how much he appreciated the talk and what was said. And to me, for a young kid to say something like that and to come up afterwards, he didn't have to. Matter of fact, I was surprised he actually said yes to being a swaggart. But I just say that it's a simple little thing I did, and that kid's changed. My friend, you have the same power as I do to change the world. Maybe one by one, your children, your grandchildren, your spouses, you have the power. And I think sometimes we forget that we have that power, all of us, not just the priests and the religious and the deacons or anything, but every one of us has that power. And I would just ask you that if you can, continue to do that. Tonight, I just want to talk a little bit about the homily, the gospel for Sunday, and then I'll talk a little bit to Passion, and then a little bit of the Eucharist, okay? The Transfiguration. That'll be the gospel for Sunday. And we all know that Jesus took his three best friends up and took up to the mountain. And in front of all of them, he was transfigured, dazzling white, with Moses and Isaiah, I guess. I forget the other one. Elijah, okay. And then he told them not to say anything. My friends, do you think for a moment that maybe, just maybe, Jesus was dazzling white all the time, his whole life. But we were so blinded or so preoccupied or so mirrored in our own sinfulness that we couldn't see him, that we couldn't see Jesus as he really was. And it took him to go out with three best friends and to show them, maybe not show him, but take off the blinders that they had so that they might be able to see Christ as he was. Is that possible? Is that possible? One of the things that we said about, I talked about the Franciscan theologies, John Duns Scotus, a medieval Franciscan theologian, he was the one who pushed the Immaculate Conception. He said, how is it possible that the Son of God, God himself, could be born in an improper vessel, you know, a woman with original sin like all of us? And he said that she was deigned specially to be able to be free from the sinfulness. So when the child was born, he was born from perfection. And the fact that he was able to see something in her. So I ask you, no, let me start out by something else. A few months ago, I had a 50th wedding anniversary of a couple. Now, they were in their 70s. Now, is anybody in their 70s here? Raise your hand. Okay. You know what it looks like to look like 75, right? This woman had a beaten up look, a tired look. I mean, wrinkles, her very thin hair, all kinds of stuff. And the poor thing was bald and skinny, and you know, he really looked like he was been beat up too. Okay? And I would swear to you that when I told them to look at each other and to renew their vows, what they looked at each other was not some old person, but was a beautiful, young, handsome stud and chick. And that's what they saw. And it's a truth to that, isn't it? That sometimes, you know, we get stuck on how we look. And, you know, what's the real look? What do we really see? What did he see in her? And what did she see in him? What did the disciples see in Jesus? This morning at Mass, I asked Father John if he was a parishioner. And it could have been. There was a youngish guy who had two false legs, and an arm. He's missing an arm there. And you know, from one standpoint, looking at him, oh my God. And yet when I looked at his face, I saw someone beautiful. I mean, or handsome, if you want to use those words. And I get stuck in those things there. But that there was something unique and special that he came, even for him coming up, walking up for communion and everything, there was something holy about him. My friends, when you and I look at people, do we look through the eyes of sin? Do we look through the eyes of, you know, prejudices? You know, they don't look like us. They don't are not as educated as we are, or they don't have this, or they don't have that. You know, are we blind to seeing what's really out there? And the other thing is, they say that if we have one or two real friends in our lives, that we are blessed. We have lots of acquaintances, lots of friends, or anything, but intimate friends, I'm not talking about sexual, but necessarily intimate in terms of sharing. If we have that, we are truly lucky. And you know, in a sense, when a husband and wife get married, you know, there's a chance of being completely stripped naked. And I'm not just talking about physically naked, but naked in terms of, you know, our feelings, ourselves, you know, in a sense that, you know, our spouses will know our own our prejudices, they'll know our feelings, they'll know our weaknesses, they'll know this, and yet still are loved. I mean, to me, there's the intimacy. And again, it's, and not just the spouses, but if you have one or two friends in your life that you're able to share on that kind of a level, there's something special that they see something in you that most other people don't see. And that's a blessing, you know? And if I think of one of the things goes back to the first day we talked to you about, you know, are we afraid? What holds you back? What holds you back from revealing yourself to God? You know, are you afraid because you did this, this, or that in the past? Are you afraid that, you know, that God won't love you? Or are you afraid that your spouse or your friends or your family or your children or your parents won't love you? What holds you back? And are we willing to allow ourselves to be transfigured, to show who we are and to be loved? Remember I told you a story about the novice master after I told him I wanted to kill his mother, and what did he do? He hugged me and told me that I'll be okay. Can you do that with those around you, with your own family members, your own friends? Can you enjoy and can you see what God sees in you? You know, when you looked in the mirror last night, Father John, most of the, I don't know if you were here in the beginning, but most of the people said they did their homework and they actually stripped of all their clothing, went into the bathroom, looked in the mirror and said, wow, you handsome stud or you chicky whatever. I was surprised how many people said yes to that. You fools. But in this sense, you know, just be yourself and to allow God to see you as you are. And hopefully that you see God as God is. And not just that, but they said to you, that young man, you know, certainly, you know, challenges up and down. And yet he was here and he was praying and his face glowed. Do your faces glow in terms of sharing and opening your hearts? The transfiguration. I ask you, as we get ready for Sunday for the gospel, you know, can you pray that your eyes and your hearts will be opened so that you can really see? Yeah, in terms of one thing, you know, I thought about this earlier today. You know, for those of you who have kids, kids are a blessing and a curse, aren't they? I mean, sometimes they are just, you know, they're not always easy. And unfortunately, sometimes we have some of our kids that go a wrong way. That doesn't stop you from loving them. But sometimes a tough love is valuable. That's, you know, a lot of times when we talk about love, 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 love. Well, that's nice, but that's very romantic and it's very kind of shallow. But the love that we're talking about, the love that we have for Jesus and that Jesus has for us, is not shallow. It's a tough love. And we'll hear that in a few minutes when I talk to you about the passion. That we have a love. And sometimes you have to make hard decisions, you know, in your families, with your friends, with your children. But do it from the standpoint of love and not being angry, not being vengeful, and not being hurt. See your children and your parents. That's another thing that's kind of funny. I say sometimes it's hard raising parents. Are any of you doing that right now? It's tough, isn't it? I mean, people come to confession to me and they mention that they're ready to kill their parents. And okay, I could see that. But love, a tough love. And to find ways to get support. You need to have support for yourselves to help you to maintain that tough love. And so if you're taking care of your parents, you know, you can't do it by yourself. You have to have people to help you. You have to, by your support, or even just someone that you can call your friends who are having a hard time with and show your support. Can you find ways to help? The second thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about tonight was the passion. The Thomists and the Augustinians say that Jesus came for the expiation of our sins, for our sinfulness. And that's what all of us have been taught that, haven't we? We've been taught that, that's what Jesus came for. And the old Franciscans would say, yeah, that's part of it. But really, really, Jesus came because God loved us. And he loved us so much that he was willing to do anything to show his love. Anything. It's all about love. And sometimes that's a tough love. But a love that maintains itself. So when we look I'll talk a little bit in a minute about the Holy Week, but when we look at Jesus dying on the cross, he's just not doing it because of our sinfulness. He's doing it because of love of us. I mean, did I tell you, did I give example of my father and my sister who had a cancer? Okay. No? Okay, I'll tell it again. For those who heard it, take a nap. 2-minute nap, 2-second nap. When I was a small boy, my youngest sister developed some type of female cancer. And my father was a tough guy. He was not an easy guy. He was not mean, not nasty, never touched us, never hurt us or anything, but was kind of a rough. And when my sister was going through this rough time, he said that he would do anything possible to help her, if it meant giving him his kidneys to do this and do that, his lung, anything possible. And then if we couldn't afford it, we would sell the house and do anything possible for her. Now, I was a boy. I was probably about 12 years old, and I can still remember that day. To me, that was an experience of total love. And perhaps those of you who are parents, or not even just parents, but in terms of anybody, you know, the love that you probably had for somebody and what you were willing to go through for the sake of your children, your friends, your parents. Total love. God gave us Christ as a sign of total love. As I said, he did not just come for the expiation of our sins. That was one thing. But he came because he loved us. And he went through the whole agony in the garden, the whole Calvary event, the whole crucifixion, because of love. And a challenge for us is that when we look up at the crucifix, oh, I can't see it now because it's hiding, but do we look at it because here he is saving us from our sins, or are we looking at him because he loved us? You know, when I think of my dad who's been dead for a few years now, one of the first things I remember is how much he loved his daughter. And I would venture to say that he probably would have done that for each one of us, all four of us. And I hope that that's for your sake, that your love, that you are remembered for the love that you have for people. Just one little thing along that side is, remember I told you about, you know, I try to be the perfect seminarian. I try to do everything right. The other guys were out drinking at nighttime and partying. Here I was in the chapel praying and whatever. And for me, I always thought holiness was doing the right thing. That being holy meant that you'd be a normal person, a person who's, you know, balanced, knows what's happening. And I used to think that was the best thing. And I realized one time, the novice master told me, holiness is not being whole. Holiness is loving God. And we can be sinners and still be saints because we love our God, because we have our faults, we have our sinfulness, we have our issues. And as long as we love, that's the important thing. And I would say to you, even as a parent or a spouse or a friend or whatever it might be, you know, the most important thing is that you love. And you give out from what you can in terms of loving the other person, which means you can make mistakes. Is there anyone here that's perfect? Father John, put your hand down. Even though you are not perfect, who of you wants to be a saint? Raise your hand. And that's the important thing, right? And as a sinner, and as someone who's not whole and who makes mistakes, we are still called to be holy. We are still called to be saints. And that's the important thing. So don't try to be perfect, because it's not going to happen. Try to be holy. And that's the important thing. The next thing I want to talk to you about is, as I said, you know, Jesus came as an act of love and endured everything. The Franciscans would say that the event of the love that had at the crucifixion began with the washing of the feet. In your parish, do you have the opportunity to have your feet washed, or do they have, they do wash some feet? You know, we at our parish, the priests and the deacons all wash the feet of people. Some people have dirty feet. And I usually preach on Holy Thursday at my parish, and I tell all the people who have holes in their socks or really smelly feet, go to the pastor. Not me. But in a sense, though, washing of the feet. How many times do you wash the feet of your parents, of your children, of your friends? You know, that's where the idea of love comes. You know, and that's the sign that to be the Lord, the Master, is to be a servant. And each one of us are called not to be in charge, but to be servants of others. You know, how many times, it's funny, I have some friends, was one couple of friends of mine that they have six kids, and he wants number seven. Now, the oldest kid is eight, and when I go to their house, it's chaos. And I'm used to in my monastery, all the boys go to bed by 7 o'clock, so I don't see them, and nothing, and these kids are screaming and yelling, and the parents will say, stop that stuff. The kids just look at them and say, yeah, 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 and keep going. And the idea of serving, of helping the kids, and even when you think that when your kids turn 18, that's the end of your job, it keeps going until they die or you die. Holy Week, starting with the washing of the feet. I ask you, can you wash someone's feet in the next few weeks before Easter, before Holy Thursday? I'm not necessarily saying literally, but that might be that too. I came in on Monday, and a friend of mine in Scottsdale, their best friend is dying of pancreatic cancer. So I went and during the whole time, his wife was massaging his feet because he had no more feelings down there. But to me, that's total love. To me, it is being a servant. And I ask you, my friends, not to be the masters, not to be the lords, but to be servants. And that's what Jesus wants. I often say that, I know, Jesus says, you know, if you want to be great, you know, serve to be the least. I think we should want to be great. We should want to be the best parent. We want to be the best teacher or the best worker or best whatever. But by doing that means serving, not be lording it over other people. Does that make sense? Just that you find ways to be of service. And Holy Week. We Catholics are very good at being couch potatoes. Do you, at nighttime when you go home, do you sort of lay in your bed or sit on your couch or whatever with your drink or your soda or your popcorn and everything with the remote control thing and just flip through the channels all night long? And you watch them and you see a big, great big football game when the Eagles almost won and you're watching it and everybody's getting excited and you're there and everything. As you sit on the couch, and then when you turn the channel, and it goes on and on. My friends, we as Catholics are very good at being couch potatoes. We sit back and watch things as they go on, and we miss something. I ask you, this Holy Week, will you enter into the celebrations? Will you get into, can you, excuse my little idiosyncrasies there, can you get into your time machines? And can you go back to the time of Jesus when he's on that donkey and he's riding through and the people have their palms and are waving? Can you be there too? Can you be waving the palms? And then a little later on in the gospel, when they go through the passion and they say, crucify him, crucify him. Can you enter into that? So just a little bit of a check. So would you say that, crucify him?
Crucify him.
Oh, God. Change the channel. Okay, another channel.
Crucify him.
A little better, but still, give me my potato chips now.
Crucify him.
Get into it, my friends. Get into the celebration of Holy Week. And if you can, when you come up to Spy Wednesday. You know, I don't know what you think, but Judas. You know, do any of you watching The Chosen? Did you watch that? Anyway, if you get a chance, it's they just ended their third season. And I really like the show. It's not Catholic, but it's not particularly Pentecostal, or it's not, you know, Baptist or anything. I think it's just kind of average thing. What I like about it is that it gives you the sense of the apostles and Mary and everything doing normal, regular stuff. Remember that one day I said, you know, that, you know, does Jesus walk around always with his hands folded and or did he talk about the cardinals? Did he talk about, you know, his favorite Mexican food or something? He was real. And I think it's one of the things that I think in The Chosen that comes up that way. But getting into it, getting into the experience. And right now in The Chosen, you're watching it, right? What do you think of Judas?
Knowing the whole story.
Ah, see, yeah, I can't. But he comes across being very nice right now, doesn't he? He comes across being very normal, regular, and enthusiastic, and concerned, and whatever, which is not exactly as Cecilia. We're prejudiced because we know what's happened, right? Is it possible that maybe Judas really loved Jesus, but he thought that Jesus was going too slow because he wanted everyone to grab it and be anti-Roman and overthrow the Roman government? And maybe he thought that if he would push the Pharisees and the Jewish leadership, that at the point that when he's being attacked and everything, he would say, ta-da, super Jesus here. Now, that's just one theory, you know. So it'd be interesting to see what happens in The Chosen, how that works out. But, you know, for the time being, he's still the bad guy. But actually, my friends, get into it on a Holy Thursday. If you can go to church and you can spend some time at the services, awesome. But if you can't, can you do something at home? Can you maybe wash someone's hands in your family? Can you perhaps sit down and have a meal? I don't know if people have meals together. Personally, I think it's a shame. I know reality. You know, for those who have families and kids are soccer, football, this and that, and all the kind of stuff there, and sometimes the best thing you do is throw something in the microwave and turn a TV on and have a microwave meal and off you go. And sometimes with everybody, I mean, it's a reality, but in a sense, it's a shame. The shame of it is that we need to sit down and be with each other. And one of the things that I always say at every Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter to my parish is, if there's someone in the parish or your neighborhood that is all alone, maybe they lost their spouse, maybe they never were married, maybe they're alone, can you find a way to invite them to your house for a meal? Can you invite them to sit down? It doesn't take too much food or dishwasher to wash their dirty dishes or anything, but just to go out and to feel that we are a family, that you are a family here in church, and that you are a family in your own homes. Matter of fact, you are a church in your own homes. You are church. So I would ask you, can you do that? If you know somebody in your neighborhood who's by themselves, invite them. Let them be part of your experience. And on Good Friday, when I was a kid, one of the things that we did, and it's silly now, that my best friend and I, we would play Monopoly from 12 to 3 on Friday. But what we did is that we wouldn't talk. That was our giving up. I looked at it, I said, that's dumb. But can you find something on Friday, Good Friday, if at least from 12 to 3, to go out and to experience what Jesus might have been going through because he loved you, because he wanted to be with you. Do something out of love on Good Friday. And on Holy Saturday, can you find some time? It's an unknown time. You know, Jesus is in the grave. A quiet time, a pregnant time in one way. Can you find somehow to get into that? Now, Holy Saturday services, I think, can be long. You know, and some churches, they have 9 readings, others they have 3. The blessing of the fire, the baptismal water. Can you make a point to get some holy water? And matter of fact, do you have holy water in your house right now? It's important. And I would say always, if you have children or grandchildren, when they come to your house, can you do what the Italian fathers do? When the kids go to bed, they put a little sign on the cross on their foreheads. And it sounds silly, but I've seen it in Italian homes when teenagers come up and they ask for the blessing. I mean, in one sense, it's to start it now is kind of a challenge, but it's still a group work. Find something, some kind of sacramental, some type of thing that works for you. I mean, only you know what works in your own family. But do something that's holy on Holy Saturday. And on Sunday, on Easter Sunday, will you see how love conquers all? That the love of Christ, the love of God for you, has changed the world. I told you the first time I was here that, you know, Copernicus in the 1500s changed the world when he said that the earth revolves around the sun. I told you July 22, the world changed when the Webb's telescope started sending pictures of things that we just couldn't believe are happening. Today the world has changed, hopefully for you and for me, that you and I see the world differently, that we see the young man that has the prosthetic legs and no arm, as beautiful and as a gift of God. And that will see, maybe pushing it, the homeless as people who are loved by our God. To find out that sense of, it's all about love. Sometimes it's a tough love, and that's okay. But it's about God loving us so much, and loving creation, and loving incarnation. You know, Francis, you know the story of the Greccio, right? The story of Francis was so much in love with God, and he wanted to make sure that they realized, so he had the friars put in like a little stable with some cows and a little manger scene to give an impression of what it's like to be, you know, when Jesus was there being born. And the story is that at that moment, Jesus appeared as a baby. That's how much love does. That's how much your love can do for your families. It's all about love. And I would ask you that for yourselves, as we move on, that don't do things necessarily because you have to do them. Do them because of love. Okay? That's pretty much what I said. No, I forgot to say something at the beginning. Someone asked me why I was in jail in Siberia. Did you wonder about that? Do I look like a criminal? Could have been. I try to kill somebody, right? So why not? When I was over in Rome, I was responsible for building churches, parishes, hospitals, and schools around the world. So oftentimes, I would actually go to these places and take money over. And, you know, in Russia, if I wrote a check out, just to say for $100,000, the banks would take $60,000 of it for themselves. That's a lot of money. So when I went over to these places, I often had money glued all over my body. And this one time I was in Siberia, they caught me. They saw all the money I had on me, and they thought I was a drug dealer. And they put me in the jail for like a day and a half. But then someone in the town came and helped me out, get out of it. But that's, so I was not a criminal. Well, maybe I was a criminal by bringing false money into the country, but I've done that like 20 times and only once did I get caught. So I'm pretty lucky. That's a question. Does anybody have any comments or questions? No?
I recall growing up during Holy Week.
A little closer.
We're not supposed to watch TV the whole week, unless it was something religious. So we watched Fatima and Ten Commandments millions of times. Yeah.
But what works for you, right?
I'm sorry?
What works for you?
Yeah.
And what works for your cult, your family? So.
My parents were very strict about that.
Yeah, so were mine. Anybody else have any comments? I hope this was informative for you, prayerful. As I said, it's all about God's loving us, loving you. And you and I have to respond. And sometimes we don't do a good job of that, but we're called to it. But you are called to be a saint. You are called to be holy because you are loved. The last thing I just want to say is, the last thing I want to say is that I'm a big believer in angels. I very much believe in the devil. I've seen the devil in some ways, but I truly believe I've seen angels. And I have heard stories upon stories of angels. And I hope that you know that there are angels surrounding you and taking care of you. I don't know if I remember. I tell you a story about her husband was dying in the hospital. Did I tell you that? Okay. And he was dying in the hospital, and she wanted someone to come to anoint. And I just happened to be, I was going home for supper, and we were having a good supper that night. And she called up and says, can I come anoint? And I said, can I come later? And they said that she was dying, he was dying. So I went to the intensive care. Seeing her by herself was sad. So I said, I will stay with her. So I stayed with her until he died. And then the undertaker came and we did that. And then afterwards, I drove her home because I didn't think she was in a good state. And when she was driving home, she says, the night before, she was in their house and her husband was in the house. He was in a medical bed type thing in the living room. And she heard some noise and she got up and she looked out and she saw two men talking to her husband. And she got scared and she got petrified. How are they breaking in? What are they going to do to him? What are they going to do to her? A moment later, they turned around, looked at her, and disappeared. Angels taking him to heaven. My friends, I've heard stories like that many, many, many times. And maybe you have your own stories of encounters with angels. And they are a blessing for us. And there's a round it. And you, usually when I go to anoint someone, I ask to have a few private minutes with the person and just to pray and say, the angels are around you. Take your hands and let go. Go back to heaven where we are loved. My friends, I ask you, as we enter this Holy Week, know that the angels are walking with you. You're not alone. You're never alone. And that's one of the saddest things about people who commit suicide. They feel that they're all alone, and they're not. Good enough? Okay, at this time, what we're going to do is that Father John is going to expose the Blessed Sacrament, and I invite all of you to come up and to either touch the monstrance, or touch the lumina is, right? The lumina is that little thing that has the plus to go there. Or if you want to kneel, that's fine. Or just touch it and just say a quiet prayer, asking God to help you know how much you are loved. Every time you receive the Eucharist, it is a sign saying that Jesus says to you, I love you. No matter what you've done, no matter where you're at, it's a comment that Jesus is saying, I love you, and you are precious. Even if you are naked and old and scrawny and everything else like that, you are loved.